the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. If you've seen today's issue of USA Today, you know that there's a major op-ed piece in there suggesting that children are the problem of the planet. Oliver Buzz Thomas, writing in USA Today, in his article entitled "Might Our Religion Be Killing Us?", suggests that religious leaders ought to be suggesting that their followers should be having fewer children, because children, after all, are adding to the burden of the planet, and the planet is severely burdened already, and he warns we may already be past the tipping point of our environmental crisis. Now, there's something deeply disturbing about his article. At the first level, it's simply too flippant, too glib an article about something that proposes to be about a very serious issue. At the second level, are we really ready to buy into the idea that children are the problem? Furthermore, don't we get it yet that the great population problem in this country and worldwide right now, especially worldwide, is not too many people, but is soon to be too few? With falling birth rates and the aging of the population, we're going to have an imbalance between persons who are retired and no longer in their major work years and those that are having to work to support them. You're looking at social disorder and a breakdown of the social fabric in some countries. The last thing they need is to have a fall off in the birth rate. We'll be talking about this in a few minutes, and I'm going to be talking about why this fulfills the late Malcolm Muggeridge's idea of the great liberal death wish. He was talking about abortion. It certainly applies to that, but it applies to this idea, this anti-natalist, anti-baby, anti-children philosophy that says children are the problem. We'll be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. To join the conversation, call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Again, to join the conversation, call 877-893-TALK. We're always glad to hear from you by email. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com or go to albertmohler.com, hit the mail button, and we're glad to get your emails also during the program. We'll get to as many of your calls and email messages as possible in the course of this program. You can go to the website at albertmohler.com, find my article. You can read my article. You can read Buzz Thomas's article. Reach your own conclusion. Join the conversation today on the Albert Mohler Program. Over the weekend, the movie by Ben Stein, known as Expelled, hit the big screen, opening on 1,052 screens across the country. It grossed $3,153,000, ranking ninth on the weekend box office reports. That's really big. You're talking about over 1,000 screens in this country showing a film that is really in the form of a very entertaining documentary in which the well-known actor and economist Ben Stein presents the case for intelligent design. He really accomplishes two simultaneous things in this documentary. Number one, he demonstrates the cogency of the idea, that is, the power of the idea that life as we know it, the world as we know it, the entire cosmos as we know it, makes no sense apart from some kind of intelligent design. The second thing he does is to poke some significant holes in the worldview of those who are so adamantly opposed to any notion of design in the universe. One of the most effective things he does in the movie is to really kind of out Richard Dawkins, perhaps the world's most famous atheist and evolutionist, when he asks in the film Richard Dawkins the question, how did life begin? And Dawkins, who has suggested that Darwinism and evolutionary philosophy has to have an answer for virtually everything, says that he doesn't know. You'll find the documentary very, very interesting. It's pretty hard-hitting. As a matter of fact, it has something of the style of a Michael Moore documentary about it, but it's hard-hitting in a way that certainly will get your attention. I commend the film to you. It is known as Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. Hopefully it's at a big screen near you, 1,052 theaters across the country, and we'll be tracking this. As a matter of fact, we're going to hopefully get some conversation going about this movie, and I'd like to know if you've seen it, what you think about it. Email me at albertmohler.com, or give us a call, especially on Wednesday's program, and let us know what you think, and we may just devote an entire hour to talking about this as we see what the cultural response to it is. That's going to be the interesting thing. It's not only that people who are already convinced of intelligent design, already convinced of the limitations of evolutionary theory, would see it and find it fascinating. I'm really interested to know what the people who think that they are proponents of evolution, the people who think that intelligent design and creation has no plausibility. I'd like to know what they're thinking about this movie, because if they're honest, it has to be deeply unsettling. As you may know, the pornography industry is spreading across this country and worldwide in a way that some now suggest ranks it as the seventh largest industry in the United States. You start looking at that and you realize that a part of the reason why you have to put footnotes and some kind of qualifier on any estimation like that is because taking the full scale and scope of the pornography industry in this country is almost impossible. You're not talking about just things like magazines and videos and television. You're talking about such things as rentals in hotel rooms. You're talking about the vast new pornography domain of the internet. And you're talking about now the reality that professional pornographic filmmakers are finding competition from individuals who are making their own porn films and posting them on the internet and sharing them with each other, not to mention the teenagers with their cell phones sending photographic messages to each other of a pornographic nature. But one of the most insidious aspects of all of this is, if you are unaware, the hotel industry is really making a lot of money on pornography. As a matter of fact, one recent study indicated that a frighteningly large percentage of those who actually are guests in hotel rooms purchase pay-per-view pornography during the course of their stay. Not only do they purchase it, they tend to purchase more than one movie or package. Now, one of the chains that has been offering a great deal of pornography is Marriott. And what surprises many people, of course, is that Marriott, that has a lot of Mormon involvement and investment in it, has also tried to present a very clear family image. Now, several conservative groups have gone to Marriott, and as a matter of fact, 47 pro-family leaders, self-designated, have signed a letter asking the chain's chief executive, and that is the well-named J.W. Marriott Jr., to meet to discuss the problem. According to the letter, Marriott was told that stopping porn movies would be in keeping with the corporation's position of, and in the words of the letter, promoting the well-being of children and families. Marriott has about 3,000 hotel properties in the United States and 67 other countries. Most of their hotels offer in-room movies with pornographic content. Now, when you look at this, it's just a reminder that nothing in this economy is as simple as it looks. You know, even when you start thinking about a hotel, you think, well, I'm simply purchasing a hotel room. And it's not just Marriott. Frankly, that's just one example of many the major hotel chains. In fact, almost all of them, with a few very rare exceptions, offer not only pornographic movies, but entire packages of pornography for guests. And not only that, they derive a good deal of their profit from the sale and the promotion of those products. But you think about staying in a hotel, and you think about getting a room and a bed and just a safe place and hopefully a little quiet to be able to have a few hours of precious sleep while you're traveling. And it's an eye-opening experience to realize that you can so quickly become complicit in a business that's doing business in pornography, even when you have no intention of looking at pornography yourself and you buy none of it, you have nothing to do with it, you're still involved in a financial transaction of which pornography is a large part. Now, I'm not saying don't travel. I'm not saying don't stay in hotels. I'm saying that intelligent Christians need to be very much aware that in a fallen world, the economy has all kinds of complicity in that fallenness. I hope these family leaders are successful in bringing an encouragement to the Marriott Corporation to get out of the pornography business. But let's be really honest, not only with that company, but with the other major hotel chains. If you are selling this stuff, then you may call yourself a hotel chain. But in reality, you're also in the pornography business. Looking at other issues in the news, the business front page, Business Day, the New York Times today, has a front page article entitled "Sending the Marines to Recruit Women." The photographic images will certainly get your attention. The Marine Corps is now running ads in magazines aimed at women. The first line of the article is this: "The Marines are looking for a few good women." For the first time, the Marine Corps is marketing itself to women in a concerted way. It is running ads in magazines like Shape, Self, and Fitness, which appeal to female readers mainly, as well as through more mainstream outlets like American Idol. It says here, the message is a unisex one of patriotism rather than macho swagger. Well, that may be what they're saying, but let me tell you, when you look at the photograph, it looks like a lot of macho swagger in terms of what's being presented here. As the article says, in the latest campaign, a print ad shows a female Marine striking a martial arts pose in front of a crowd of men who are looking up to her as their leader. The tagline, "There are no female Marines." only Marines, end quote. Now, when you start thinking about this, at least, I would think, sensitive and intelligent and reflective Christians would wonder what it means when it is considered important to blur the distinctions between men and women, even in an advertisement, and to make the point that there are no male Marines and female Marines, only Marines. Well, if that's the case, then why does she strike this predictably masculine pose? And why does that now rank first page business section rank in the New York Times? We'll be back to talk about the matter of children and the environment. Are babies the problem? On the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. In the wee hours early this morning, I happened to look at the op-ed piece of USA Today, today's edition. Here is the forum article, the headline, "Might Our Religion Be Killing Us?" Underneath that, the subtext, "Is what we preach and ultimately what we believe hastening the destruction of the planet? The answer appears to be a resounding yes. So then what?" Now that's a scary kind of headline. Is what we preach and ultimately what we believe destroying the planet? And then it comes right back and says the answer appears to be a resounding yes, not even a maybe yes, not even a hesitant yes, not a hypothetical yes, but a resounding yes. Well, this is editorial hyperbole in terms of the text of this headline. The article is by Oliver Thomas, known as Buzz Thomas, and in his op-ed he says this, and let me just read to you from a little bit of the article. He says, "Be fruitful and multiply, says the book of Genesis, and Lord knows we have, to the tune of more than 300 million at home and more than 6 billion abroad. But as we go about the heavenly task of multiplying, a poignant question arises. Might our religion be killing us? We all remember the Aztecs. Some say their religion, with its penchant for violence and human sacrifice, played a critical role in the destruction of their civilization. We moderns are far more sophisticated, of course, but if we persist with some of our religious practices, we could be heading down the same disastrous dog trot. Sort of a reverse Noah story. Noah is credited with saving humanity during the big flood. We could be the ones who get blamed for destroying it." He goes on after this to suggest that we may have reached a tipping point with the environment. Talks about hundreds of scientists, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, warning recently that the crisis is more dramatic than we ever could imagine. He says this, "Even if we stop producing harmful greenhouse gases, immediately temperatures could continue to rise and ocean levels along with them for the next 1,000 years. Says here that the predictions portend drought, starvation, and species extinction. By the way, one of the main points I want to make about this article is if it's intended to be serious, it deserves a more serious argument than this. I mean, already in just three paragraphs of his story, he says, "We may have reached a tipping point. It may be impossible to turn this thing around, and the end result of what may be irreversible may be human extinction. So stop having babies, or at least stop having multiple babies." He says this, "Of course, much of our environmental problem is due to overpopulation. There are simply too many people for the planet to sustain, at least the way we expect to be sustained, period." Now, let's ask the question, is that true? I don't believe so for a moment. I don't believe that we have a net number surplus of human beings on this planet. I mean, number one, who in their right mind could tell us how many people there ought to be on planet Earth? And who would have the audacity to come up with that number? Now, he couches this in a very, very careful language. He says that there are simply too many people for the planet to sustain at least the way we expect to be sustained. In other words, he's not saying that different lifestyle conditions and structures could not allow more people, but he says if we're all going to live like Americans, then we're going to have to see that that's unsustainable. Well, that's probably at least, with a grain of truth. But one of the things we need to note is that America is not a static culture. America is changing a great deal. There are many kinds of energy efficiency that are being brought into American life right now that are not detracting from our lifestyle, but are actually enhancing our lifestyle. The trade-offs that we talk about that are part of any sane environmental approach. But he goes on and says this. He says, "For each additional human, planet Earth and the rest of us pays a price. The world knows where all this is headed. In fact, we even devote an entire day, Earth Day, which will mark Tuesday, to promote awareness. Now, he says here that the whole world knows where all this is headed. Well, count me out. I don't know where all this is headed in terms of the environmental crisis. This is the kind of writing that you would hope any intelligent person would look at and say, now, wait just a minute. That is a facile, simplistic, frankly, intellectually dishonest argument. But at least it reflects the worldview of some in the elites, and that's what's really important here, who really do believe that children are the problem. Listen to more of his argument. He says this, now consider the Roman Catholic Church's continued opposition to modern birth control, or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints' encouragement of large families. This might not alarm you until you realize that nearly one, you're supposed to be hearing some kind of ominous music in the background here, that nearly one in every five humans on the planet is Roman Catholic, and that the Latter-day Saints belong to one of the fastest-growing religions in the Western Hemisphere. Many Orthodox Jews and some Muslims also eschew birth control. Okay. You see, there again, that is an argument that that really needs to be disarmed for what it is. Especially when he comes to the end and he says many Orthodox Jews and some Muslims also avoid birth control. Well, let's look at that. So we have Orthodox Jews, Muslims, Catholics, and Mormons, and add to that a large number of evangelical Protestant Christians who are rethinking the entire birth control question, and guess what? You've got a whole lot of people right there. Furthermore, you've got some opposition to the idea of artificially limiting families across many different cultures for many different reasons in many different regions of the world. And as a matter of fact, the idea that a family should be naturally restricted, volitionally restricted to an incredibly small family, that's taken root basically only in the secularized West. Now, in China, it has taken root only because of the state pressure. The state mandate, the hard force of Chinese law with their one-child-only policy. But it gets better. Just listen to this. He writes, in the interest of preserving our planet and our species, shouldn't religious organizations be encouraging smaller families? Do our spiritual leaders need additional divine revelation to realize that our current doctrines, which threaten to take the entire world down with us, have become ethically and theologically questionable? He says population growth hits hardest in the poorest nations, and as poverty increases, public health declines. I am quite certain that God is not the author of human misery, but by preaching against birth control, at the same time we are preaching against abortion, it seems that we're making God out as a cruel buffoon or both. He goes on and says, I recognize that religious organizations tend to be conservative institutions. Their continued resistance to equal rights for women and gays is a good example. A woman may be president of Harvard or speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, but in the largest religious organization on the planet, women still can't get ordained as parish priests, and it's even worse for lesbians and gays. End quote. Now, what in the world does that have to do with the size of families? I mean, what he's doing here is throwing in all these arguments, in this case, most specifically against the Roman Catholic Church, but frankly, against any form of institutional Christianity that would clearly suggest that there's an order for women and men in the church. I mean, you're talking about, well, worldwide, a majority of Christians, not just the Roman Catholic Church on that issue. When it comes to concerns about birth control, not only do you have the official teaching of the Roman Catholic Church, but you also have a spreading sense of concern among many evangelical Christians. He says that religion often comes late to the party, suggesting that on the environmental issue, we're going to be embarrassed. He says, first, we should stop having so many children. Clergy should consider voicing the difficult truth that having more than two children during such a time is selfish. Dare we say sinful? The average American might not listen to his elected representatives, but he sure listens to his pastor. Every week, he says, he listens. This will be a hard message for pastors to preach and parishioners to hear, but without it, we court disaster. Okay, folks, let me ask the question. Are children the problem? One of the things we need to realize is that environmentally, sure, population is a part of the equation. But, you know, we just had Matthew Connolly on this program last week, the historian at Columbia University, showing the disastrous and tragic results of what happens when you have intellectual elites, government structures, and bureaucracies try to make the decisions about the reproductive destiny of others, telling couples how many children they should or should not have. To join the conversation, call us at 877-893-8255. Is Christianity killing the planet by encouraging parents to have babies? Give me a call. This is the Albert Miller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Okay, so here is the real core of his argument. Buzz Thomas, writing in USA Today, an op-ed piece today, is really suggesting that you are doing something wrong. He says, maybe even sinful. He not only insinuates it, he openly suggests it. If you have more than two children because of the environmental crisis. Now, I just want to ask you, as Christians, as Christian couples in particular, how are you going to process that? Are you going to look at having the question of a third child and say, I'm not sure we can do that, and look at the environment straight in the face? I mean, one of the problems with this article is it is just so simplistic in terms of this argument. I mean, worldwide, population rates are already falling. They're falling by means other than state coercion. You look at the financial, social, cultural changes in the world. They're bringing about all kinds of things. Some of those not necessarily good. I want to ask you a question. Who's happier? The man with the big family but less in terms of material goods living in one culture? Or the American family split apart in so many different directions because we're frantically trying to ride this machine to make everything go so we can have all the things we want and live the way we want in this country. Who's really happier? Furthermore, who's really happier for the earth if you're going to think in crassly, simplistically environmental terms? And you know, poverty is a big issue. But if you are actually a couple in an impoverished land, it might be that having more children is a rational response because in the long run, children bring in more than they cost. You know, this whole idea that human beings are a blight upon the planet is a real problem. There is an anti-natalist philosophy here. There's also an anti-humanist philosophy embedded within this because every single human being begins as a baby. So if you're having fewer babies, we're going to have fewer human beings. And you're really talking about making decisions, either by social pressure or perhaps even in some context by coercion, such as in China, in terms of the reproductive decisions that couples make. Buzz Thomas says that our religious doctrines are doing this to us. He says they threaten to take the entire world down with us. He's pleading for religious leaders, Christian leaders in particular, to encourage smaller families, no more than two children per couple. He says that clergy ministers should consider voicing the difficult truth that having more than two children during such a time, that's this time, is selfish. Dare we say sinful? Well, what do you say? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I can't believe that there aren't a lot of Christian couples out there who would say, now, wait just a minute. Are you telling me that I am supposed to understand that bringing a child into this world is, meaningful in terms of environmental responsibility that I am supposedly violating in terms of having this child? Now, let me just remind you that the biblical worldview sees children as a blessing. Furthermore, human beings are assigned the responsibility, God's people specifically are assigned the responsibility of bringing into the world and raising godly progeny. Children are uniformly seen as a blessing in the Bible, not as a curse. And there is, in this generation of young Christians, young evangelical Christians, it's not just Roman Catholics and Mormons, but among many younger evangelical Christian couples, there's a desire for larger families. I see it in front of me all the time. I'm surrounded by many of them, and I see God's glory in it. You know, I find it very, very sad, but incredibly revealing that an article on such an important issue, what's purported to be such an important issue, would be presented so simplistically. But if you've been following these issues over time, you know that this is just a rehashing of what's been heard again and again and again. The idea that the planet is about to collapse under the weight of an expanding population has been around for at least 200 years, with recurring cycles of dire warnings. Even back in the 1970s, we are warned that if the population growth did not stop, and it certainly didn't, that there would be mass starvation by the end of the 1970s. Guess what? It didn't happen. I mean, if you're thinking about, for instance, what you're looking at with the environment, just think about this. Human beings, if indeed there is such a tipping point that has been reached, according to Buzz Thomas, human beings are going to have an awful lot of willpower, manpower, human power to deal with the challenges that face us. We've got calls coming in from across the country. You can join by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Do you believe that babies, children, are really a big environmental crisis, that having additional babies is a sin, at least beyond the number two for a couple, because it represents net population growth. You know, again, the reality is that in this country, even more so in Europe, and in many other parts of the world, the big issue right now is not an expanding population, but the crisis of having a shrinking population. Just look to Russia. The social fabric is threatened there by the fact that there are fewer Russians, and in the future will be fewer and fewer with current birth rates. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Back with your calls in just a moment. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, this is the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The late Malcolm Muggeridge, British journalist, used to talk about what he called the great liberal death wish. And that was his reflection on the 20th century. You look back and you see how liberal ideologies, and when he's talking about liberal, he's not just using a code word like liberal, conservative, red, blue state, Republican, Democrat. He was in a different context, suggesting that these great utopian theories about how humans should behave, and the 20th century is littered with them, really represent some kind of a death wish. And he looked at abortion as one example. He says, in the name of human liberty, we will kill human beings. And somehow death just becomes a part of the wish of this kind of ideology. Now you're looking at the great liberal death wish, I would argue, in a different form by this treatment of children, of babies in particular, as the problem, leading to an environmental crisis. Let's go to Woodland, California. Peter's on the line. Welcome to the program, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
What do you make of all this?
Yeah, well, you know what I think? I think it's just a reflection of wrong laws. I think that what we've done is we've made laws reflect the assumption that a child is a damage, and because of that, that the parent should have to be punished for having a child, rather than just assuming that a child is a benefit well worth the cost of raising.
Now, are you thinking of tax laws in particular there, Peter?
I'm thinking about like child support laws, or I'm thinking about laws that welfare and such.
Yeah.
That basically say, oh, you poor parent, you have a child. It's like it's some kind of a blight that grows on you, rather than the most beautiful thing that can happen to a parent in their whole life.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, when you start thinking about what the picture of normal is that a society presents, and law is a part of that codification, I thought you might be talking about the tax policies, because the exemption, the personal exemption for the benefit for children, is just, you know, so woefully inadequate to actually thinking about making a big economic difference in terms of the culture helping to subsidize through that kind of tax relief, the raising of children. Good point, Peter. I appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, where Jennifer is listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi. Dr. Mueller, I just thought that this man seems to think of children not as an opportunity. We don't know who our children will grow up to be, whether they'll be presidents, whether they'll figure out how to use some alternative form of gas, or what kind of thing they could use for the environment. And he just appears to be actually looking in at the members of these religions and saying perhaps their children are making it even worse on the environment.
Yeah, you know, you start looking at that and you realize that you really have a worldview divide here. Let's just take a child. Let's take that child, a baby, young child. Let's bring that child into worldview A, and that is the modern secular worldview. Now, there's a lot, of course, that worldview would tell us about that child, but as this kind of article increasingly demonstrates, the child is seen as now an open question. In other words, the child's going to have to prove his worth. We'll find out economically, culturally, socially, whether this child was a good addition to the human family or not. You go to worldview two, the Christian worldview. The Christian worldview, oddly enough, unlike the secular worldview, says this child's a sinner. Made in the image of God is the most important thing about him. And the most important thing about him says that this child is a good in terms of a contribution to society just because he is. Because every single human being made in the image of God, as every single human being is, becomes a net addition to the wealth of the human family and is to be greeted as a gift, not only by the couple, not only by the family, but by the entire civilization. And so the exchange of that one worldview for the other comes with consequences. And, you know, all you have to do is look at the anti-children philosophy that's spreading throughout this country. I mean, you've got retirement communities where children are not allowed. You know, just to flip the question, you couldn't possibly say, we're going to have a neighborhood here where no old people are allowed. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine the political equation of saying, no one over 65 may live here? We don't want the noise from old people. No, instead, you have retirement communities where they say, we don't want kids. Then you look at communities which, in some cases, are reflecting an imbalance, and you have a lot of people who have reached retirement age, and they say, look, we raised our kids, we paid those taxes, we don't want to build any more schools, we don't want to build any more parks. And if you don't believe that's happening, I could take you to parts of the country, including some areas like in South Florida, where that is an ongoing issue, where you have people who say, look, you know, enough is enough. We're not going to take that money to build parks and other things. We'd rather just not pay the taxes. Now, the taxes are a legitimate issue for discussion, but it's the priority against children that is my concern in those cases. And then, of course, you've got those who are ideologically preaching no more kids or cut down on the kids, who are treating. And just think about how the birth control revolution has really facilitated this. I mean, we wouldn't be having this discussion. I want you to be careful and notice this very carefully. Think about this with me for just a moment. These people who are urging this are not saying don't have sex. They're saying don't have babies. In other words, their entire argument is historically plausible, even in terms of technological terms, only in the last 30 years or so, 40 years or so. You get outside of modern, effective birth control, and nobody is suggesting that this is the same argument. And so what we're looking at here is really concomitant with the way we have separated sex from reproduction, the way we have separated sex from marriage, the way we have separated children from marriage and children from sex, the way that we have confused the natural order time and time again, turning it upwards, backwards, taking it apart, putting it together in the synthetic and plastic way we think we can play with everything, and then we wonder why there's such confusion. Now, Christians must first of all observe what in the world's going on here. And taking that into account, recognize, you know, we simply can't fall into the thought patterns of a world that follows a secular worldview. We need to be diagnosticians who, like a doctor giving a diagnosis, will be able to take this kind of proposal back to its originating principles in a worldview. But that kind of analytical step is only the first step. The most important thing for us is not what we think about this article, but whether we're really living out the glory of God in our families. That's a harder question. But then again, we already knew that was a far more important question. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program. This is what Buzz Thomas writes in one of the final paragraphs in his article. He says, here's the thing. We need visionary religious and political leaders to start thinking about these problems if we are to have any chance of solving them. Not decades from now, when coastal cities could be flooded and southern states struggling to secure enough fresh water. He goes on and says, there's little doubt that the human species has the ability to survive what lies ahead. Now, that's very interesting because he already warned just earlier in the article, looking at this article, today's edition of USA Today, that we may already have passed the tipping point, which could portend drought, starvation, and species extinction. But then he says, hey, there's no doubt that that we can survive. He says this, there is considerable doubt, however, as to whether we have the ability to rise above our personal and tribal interests to earnestly seek the common good. This includes, he says, our religious interests. It might be my belief that I should have as many children as God will allow, but if having additional children imperils my neighbor's ability to obtain food, water, or shelter, I need to think twice about it. even if my neighbor is in Uganda. People are unlikely to do these things until their religious leaders and their government tell them they must, end quote. Let's think about Uganda for a minute. Uganda is one of those African nations really hard hit by the AIDS epidemic. You're looking at a net loss of population in some of these African countries. The last thing they need is for themselves or for the rest of us to have fewer babies. Again, one of the problems with this article, and it's published in a major national newspaper, talking about USA Today, today's edition. You're looking at prime real estate in terms of the American media. You're looking at a full-page article with advertisements. It's the only article on the page. You're looking at a simplistic approach that simply doesn't do dignity to the kind of issues that it raises. You know, I'll buy entirely into one thing in his article, and that is that our beliefs have consequences. You know, I put it this way, doctrines have consequences. Now, I don't believe for a moment that we should fear the consequence that Oliver, known as Buzz Thomas, thinks we should fear, and that is overpopulation, having more babies, because of our belief, based in the scripture, that God would have us to do so. But I do believe that doctrines have consequences. And it's not by accident. When you look in this article, there are several insinuations that what we really need to get over is biblical Christianity. That's not implicit in his article. It is explicit when he makes very clear that he says that our doctrines, our current doctrines based upon our existing divine revelation, he says here, have become ethically and theologically questionable. Well, there it is in bare form, and now we know where we stand. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. I'll meet you tomorrow on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.